This is Ansel Doing It podcast. We're two queer Latinx besties navigating academia and trying to stay sane in the process. Each week, we talk about identity, relationships, astrology, and mental health.
Join us as we figure out how to stay on top of our lives, our horoscopes, and our own self-work in these borderlands.
Hi, friend.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, I'm okay. I'm okay.
I love this like moment we're having where with the armless, what's it called? Tank top?
Yeah, the tank top I'm wearing.
Yeah, that is like your brand now. I just want people to know because we're not on video, so.
This is my summertime uniform.
Really?
Well, you have to know that when I like something, I buy multiple of that thing in every color.
I do the same thing.
So, yeah, I bought this tank top last summer. I don't even know where I bought it, but then they were like pretty cheap. So I bought like 5 or 6 of them. So yes.
I like this look. I associate this look with you so much and with you being outside walking blue.
Yes, this is my walking blue in the sun uniform. Let me get rid of my farm tan.
Okay. It's been some time. Our last episode was about PhD aftercare, and I feel like everybody could use some aftercare right now.
Was that in March, April? I know we said once a month, but here we are.
We're doing our best.
Because 2022 continues to be a shit show.
It's a dumpster fire again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we wanted to start right off the top by saying that we're thinking of folks who are suffering either directly or indirectly with all of the recent incidents of gun violence in the news. Our hearts are with Uvalde, Tulsa, Buffalo, really thinking about, you know, how much violence has been super, super present in our world recently. Mm-hmm. I am not okay, especially regarding Uvalde. Thinking about it just makes me emotional, as I'm sure a lot of folks do. So we just wanted to send some love and some sweet energy that the way of folks, if you're also feeling tender around that recently, you're not alone.
Yeah. Ditto. Hard with all of that. I think, yeah, I mean, I've also been feeling similarly. It's been hard. It's been hard the last weeks of just getting this constant news of gun violence. And also prior to that, also this fight around abortion and this constant attack on bodily autonomy, particularly for people with ovaries.
Mm-hmm.
And queer people and women.
Always.
And everybody, trans people.
Yeah.
Anybody who's not, you know, white cis men, basically. But so it's kind of a heavy time.
It is. And I think, not to say that's an excuse of why we haven't come together, but I definitely think it's harder to come together during these times because we both have different ways of processing, right? So my way of processing is like going inward and really like just sitting with it. And it's been hard. It's been hard to want to do anything, honestly. I'll start with my check-in. For May. So I started this We've talked about this organization before, but I started a summer faculty success program that I was signed up for because my institution had some money left over and gave it to the diversity hires. AKA me. So I'm cool with it. It's a very expensive program, and it's an opportunity to focus on myself as a scholar, which I have a lot of mixed feelings about, but it's been really helpful to just focus on structure when everything else doesn't seem to be very structured and chaotic and unpredictable. So I've been finding kind of comfort in the, you know, super intense planning that this program entails. And at the same time, I found myself giving it a lot of resistance. You know, I kind of was looking around like, is anyone else heartbroken? Are we expected to just keep going as normal? Like, what is this? And
so for folks who don't know what the faculty success program and the structure that you're talking about, can you share a little bit of like what you're talking about?
Yeah, I know you've done it, but it's writing 30 minutes a day, at least Monday through Friday, sitting down on either Sunday or Monday to plan your week for 30 minutes. I'm just talking about the time commitments. And then each week you do about a 2-hour conference call with two other faculty and your coach. And you check in about
2 hours.
Yeah. It's like an hour 15. Sorry. It's an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah. I was like, damn.
But it feels long. I did it. No, you're right. It's an hour and 15, but I guess for me, you know, being on the West Coast, it's earlier than it is for other folks. So it's at 9 a.m. for me on Tuesday mornings. And on top of that, like, I think it's intense accountability, right?
Yeah, that's really what it is.
Yeah, and we want that. We crave that as academics. We want it because it's rarely present for us and when it comes to our writing. But I think just the timing is really bad, and I'm doing my best, to be honest.
I mean, I did it when the semester that the pandemic happened.
How was that?
It was, you know, it's the only thing that kind of kept me going. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I was falling apart for sure, but I think that's what kind of let me keep the wheels on. Mm-hmm. And then once that ended, it coincided with the spring semester ending and my first year on the tenure track ending. And then everything kind of just fell off, went to shit. But it was good. I mean, I kept connected. So you're put into this group that you spend 12 weeks with these people, but you only talk to them once a week, and everybody does their check-ins. So you share like your goals, of what you want to get, what you did the previous week, what you want to get done, and how you're also, because there's also like short lectures, right, that you watch, and each week has a theme.
There's homework every week. It's really
So there's homework, and you learn these different skills and techniques again. And this is like targeted to essentially, again, faculty. It's called the Faculty Success Program. So essentially, it's like these 12 weeks are kind of like give you the tools to be successful, but as a faculty. But it's mostly targeting, like Angelica said, right, the writing aspect of like making time and protecting time around your writing as an academic, especially since you know, there's always accountability for things like teaching, right? Because your students are there. You have to show up.
If you don't show up,
you have to return assignments. You have to prep for teaching, but those same things in terms of accountability don't exist for the writing. So that's why this program exists. It was helpful for me. I think it's very type A, very neurotypical, very Virgo, like earth sign structure, which I really struggle with, even though I'm
a Virgo,
but I'm very, I don't know, maybe it's my ADHD, maybe it's
all of it, maybe it's Maybelline,
you know, maybe it's my Sagittarius rising, whatever it is, is just like, I learned a lot of things, but it's like hyper structured in a way that like I just don't exist in that way.
Yeah.
It's just not my MO.
I think that's fair. And I think I have a very intense anti-authority streak and I love it. It's made me who I am. But I also noticed that whenever somebody tries to teach me something new, in a really aggressive way like this, I always resist. So I kind of anticipate that I'm not going to like it.
You say aggressive when like you're signing up for this program to teach you these skills.
Yeah. You know, this is okay. My check-in will end with this. This is something about me that I don't think people know outside of like, if you see me on the internet, you probably don't know this unless you followed me for years, but I will do it, but I will talk shit the entire time. Like that's who I am. Like, I like to complain a lot and I'm very loud and I'm very reactive when it's happening.
Right.
But I will have a moment at the end where I will take what I can and what works for me and then I'll leave everything else. And that's how I am. That's just how I work through things. Like I'll definitely be loud and rude while it's happening, but I genuinely am happy that I'm in it. It just sucks right now because it's such a hard time to be doing it. And it feels selfish to focus on this when everyone else is not, you know, like I think there's a part of it that academia has always felt so selfish to me in a sense that like we've had this dedicated time to focus just on our own pursuits and our own interests. And a lot of it is selfish. You know, we are people pursuing our own little topics, you know, and it feels very lonely sometimes, but I'm trying to get over that and I'm trying to value my work and this is part of it. So, doing good, doing that. Other than that, I'm just having a great time in LA, enjoying my summer and excited to walk.
Been back?
I've been back a couple weeks and I'll be going to commencement next weekend, which is exciting to finally graduate like officially with a wizard robe. So that's my check-in. I'm excited for June graduation and pride and all of that.
And I do have one more question about your check-in, because you've now finished your first year at Washington.
My first year. Oh my God.
Your first year at this postdoc. How does it feel to be done with the first year?
I can't believe it. It went by really fast. It went by so fast that I'm like, oh shit, I did that. It feels great in a sense because it's a lot less mental burden. I think doing the PhD was harder than this job.
Mm-hmm.
Which is nice when you go from something that's really, really hard and difficult and intense to something that's a little bit less intense and less responsibility. I think maybe this is good for people doing their PhD to hear, but like, you can do this. You're totally qualified and able to do the tenure track, you know, thing. Your PhD prepares you for that and more. So I feel like my first year feels really good. I'm glad I'm done. There's some things I'm still not super happy with. Like I'm getting used to a really brand new, really different student population. Saying no to service, saying yes to things that matter. Those are things I struggled with, but overall, like I feel good about what I did with what I did. I survived in a really brand new place. I survived winter.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I think I came out better than I started.
Yeah. And it is, you know, I just want to acknowledge it's like, it's difficult that first year outside
super of hard.
Your PhD and like you were, not just you, but the general you are in your PhD for so long that to go anywhere, even if you stay in the same city, there's still going to be, again, we've talked about this in terms of the aftercare episode too, but like there's just so much transition and shifting, and you're no longer this like in this weird in-between space of like, I'm a graduate student, but I'm teaching. It's like you actually have autonomy over what you're teaching, how you're teaching it. Absolutely. And then all the other adjustments of like literally moving to a new place, to a new institution, to, you know, having to create a new community and all of those things. So,
I did good.
Yeah, you did good. You did good. And people just, you know, people kept reminding me, like, in my first year when I was at San Jose, like, it's going to be horrible. And that's before we knew there was going to be a pandemic.
Wow.
So I had, like, a kind of, you know, that's kind of, like, the given without a pandemic. So...
Yeah, I mean,
and it is intense, right? It's just a different kind of intense. It is
intense. And I want everyone who's done this transition with me or like around the same time to just acknowledge that we're doing things in a very, like you pointed out, in a very different time. Like, I think anyone who taught this past academic year, yourself included, noticed that students were very different. The psychological burden is different. Like this past year in particular felt really different and heavier. And I just want to acknowledge that we all went through it. We're all burned out, basically. Translation. Yeah. So I'm glad I got through it. There's obviously things I didn't like, things that were hard and difficult to get through. But what I am saying and what I'm hoping to stay optimistic about is that you totally can do this job. Like, I think that's something I learned this first year. It's like, oh, I can totally do this job. There's no question about it. Yeah. Is it difficult at times? Yes. Does it introduce new situations for me to navigate? Sure. But some of it is just being friendly, being collegial, being respectful. The majority of it is just showing up and trying your best when you do show up, honestly. So
yeah,
that's it. That's it for my check-in.
Well, oh man,
feeling
so much has happened for me.
You are doing a lot, so I can't wait.
I'm just exhausted from being me, you know, per usual. In a good way, though. It's all good changes. So if you don't follow me on like social media, since I posted it on every platform, even Twitter, where I don't really post anything.
That's like me on Facebook.
Yeah. I barely post anything anywhere anymore. Anyway, we can talk about that later. But I actually resigned from my job at San Jose State, sadly. Bittersweet. So I was in my third year on the tenure track this past academic year, and I decided to resign. I got an opportunity as a to be a UC Chancellor's postdoc. So I'm actually going to be continuing on as a postdoc, but now at UC Riverside. Woo! In the Department of Gender and Sexuality Studies.
Yes.
So I resigned from SJSU, but I'm still very much in academia. I'm still trying to stay in academia, at least for the time, the foreseeable future. That happened. As all of that was happening, I was also moving back from Champaign, Illinois, right? For the postdoc I was in this last year. And then was moving back across the country, driving, then camping in Yellowstone, and then got back to Oakland a couple weeks ago. So I've kind of just been in this whirlwind of my own as all of these huge shifts have happened. And as I literally, like, you know, all of this kind of happened within the matter of like weeks, like getting this position, resigning, moving, being here, closing out all my shit at San Jose, cleaning out my office, like all of these things that like are just like close it, like this closure, right? But even these transitions, you know, feel difficult, especially like in Mercury retrograde, like
truly
during not just that, but also while all of these really other heavy things are happening in society. Oh, right. And then there was like a war earlier on in the semester. I remember fucking talking to my students in Champaign about Ukraine and Russia, right? Like,
yeah,
we've already forgotten, right? Because there's all of these other things that are constantly, like, we're constantly being bombarded with all this violence and like threats, yeah, to our lives. And so, yeah, it's been a rough. I mean, I have been doing well, but I do notice how it's been rough for a lot of people, and especially my students that I had this last, yeah, semester. Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I mean, I'm still going to be in the Bay Area, but I will be in LA a lot more. So there's that, and yeah, I think that's kind of all my updates. I don't know.
Yeah,
am I forgetting anything?
I'm thinking. you gave Minnie a haircut that
I did give me. Wow,
got you in trouble. That's
what you. That's
listen.
What
you, I did. That's give my cat daughter.
Her first haircut ever in her. Old age of, I think she's like 9 years old this year.
Oh, my baby. Well, yeah. She has a double coat, right? So the haircut just looks funky because of that undercoat.
Yeah, because she's a whole different color under. So she's like a black gray cat with long hair. And so, you know, the reason I did this was because since she's been on medication, because, you know, she's on anxiety meds like everybody else in this house, she does not obsessively groom herself. So her hair was getting matted. So if you don't have cats with long hair, basically means because she's not grooming herself, she's fucking developing little dreadlocks that are like, not really good for her skin, because they're like it's painful, right?
Yeah, I bet.
And she can't undo that because she's like it was too much, and so she never had it before because she was just constantly grooming out of anxiety. And so, mm-hmm, you know, I had always wanted to take her to get groomed and to get her hair cut off, like always, because it's long and she sheds, and I'm like, you must be hot during the summer, but I just never did it. And I don't know, I just bought these clippers for pets, and he totally let me do it. She didn't even protest.
Oh, I was gonna ask. Okay.
No, I was sure she was gonna scratch the shit out of me and bite me and all those things, but she didn't. She does love getting combed, so I think like,
mm-hmm,
like I comb her often, and she always like asks me for that, so I think it was just, you know,
she was a different type of comb.
Yeah, different. I think she was like, just, I don't know what's happening, when she saw all her hair all over the floor. But anyway, that was fun. I did that. Yeah. And yeah. She's looking better now.
Yeah,
looking
she's doing good.
Now she's all like, she looks like white. Like a dusty, like a very, 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 very light gray that almost looks like she's a white cat with like black paws and a black like face. Yeah,
she looks great.
I'm not a professional, so no, she didn't look like, you know, it was an amateur job that I did.
It's okay. I don't know if you could have done a better job, honestly. In all honesty, like, a groomer probably would have made her look funky anyway because of her coat. So
no, they would have done a better job. They know what to do. I can't see her underbelly, like, it was all like, you know.
It's all
desparejo, and you know, because at some point she was annoyed with me. She was like, okay, I'm done. Like,
and
you know,
you weren't.
And I had to keep giving her treats, and there was so much more to go because it's just so much. Anyway.
Oh, well, you're a good dad. You're a great dad. thank you for being a present father.
You know, I'm just trying to do things differently than how I could.
I feel like events of doing it had drinking games. One of them would be whenever we mentioned that we don't have a dad.
Right.
take a shot every time either of us mentions our absent fathers.
Oh my God. I brought it up recently in the, I don't know, serious conversation.
It's my favorite joke to make with people and make them.
Yeah. I totally was like, I just wish I had a dad.
I recently was on a car with my partner and my sibling and my mom, and I don't know what came up, but I said, like, oh, do dads do that for their kids? And then I asked my partner directly, I was like, is that what your dad did? Is that what having a dad was like? And he was like, yes, it was. He's so annoyed with me. He's like, yes, that's what it was like. And I know you didn't have it.
Oh my God.
So anyway, we'll stop being annoying about that. But I do want to shift us into the main conversation. It is June. It is Pride Month. All corporations are gay right now.
Yes, exactly. Yes, everything is gay at Target. Just like, it's kind of cute, but it's also like, wow.
There's a fine line. There's a really, really fine line, and nobody sees it.
Like, I'm not going to lie. I did buy a candle from Target.
Rainbow Pride candle?
That's, huh?
Is it rainbow?
No, it's not rainbow, but it was made for their, like, Pride Month, like, I don't know what you call it, merchandise.
Yeah.
And the candle does not have a rainbow on it, but it's like those big candles with like three wicks.
That is very gay, actually.
Yeah, and it's like a lavender candle, but it's called Butch Please. So I was like, I had to get it.
It worked.
It did work, and I was mad that it worked, because, you know, the other thing is like, well, I do shop there, so
yeah, you do. I do too.
And I was in need of a candle, so
might as well.
But all of their other rainbow shit, I mean it did, like, you know, give it side eye, but as I approached it, but you know,
yeah. I have a lot of feelings about Pride in general, but I think mostly I like it when corporations hire creators of color, hire, you know, small creators who need the platform, who could use the exposure, who could use the money. Let's be honest. My favorite thing about June is that people get paid, people that we know, people we care about. So at the end of the day, I'm not going to get in the way of somebody getting their coins. Because I know how hard it is to get those coins to eat. Some corporations do a better job of that than others, I will say. Some of them just change their profile picture and that's it, you know?
Yeah.
And they treat their employees like shit, especially their queer employees. So, you know, let's be honest. But overall, I mean, I think
it's Pride 365 24/7 right?
Yeah, we're like fucking queer every day of the year. So welcome to another month of the same, you know. But I did want to, like,
but do tell us of this what is it called? Collaboration that you did that you were hired for was to bring us into the meat of our conversation.
Yeah. So today's conversation, thank you, is all about queer kinship is a love spell, and talking about queer community, queer friendships being very, very different, at least in our experiences, right, of what other friendships can be and the potential they have. I had the opportunity to do a collaboration with a really cool coffee brand called Fellow out in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Gay headquarters, really, one of the gay meccas, right? if you think about it. They approached me because they had, and this is a story nobody knows, so this is an exclusive of the podcast, of how these things come together. But oftentimes, if you're an illustrator or an artist, a company will send you an email and they'll be like, we want to collaborate. This is our budget. If they're good, they'll say, this is our budget. This is what we have in mind. This is the time frame. What do you think? Right. And then you go through the whole process of signing a contract and discussing that. For this one, I got a really cool email from the people at Fellow that said, hey, we'd love to talk to you about possibly doing a collaboration for Pride. You are one of four artists that we're reaching out to. And when I called them or talked with them, they told me that their employees suggested artists. Mm-hmm. And then they created a pool of 200 artists from that. What would you call that in research terms? Is that a rolling sample? Something like that. So,
oh my God.
I know, right? We're so nerdy. And then after that, the team leaders and management kind of chose four artists. They narrowed it down from 200 to four artists, and that's who they reached out to. And that feels great to know, because I always want to know, how do you find me? How did you find me? Right. How do you want to work with me? And do you know who I am? Because I'm very specific about what I say and how I say it. So right. Just want you to know what you're getting into. And they were really excited about my work. They knew that my work was explicitly political and they weren't afraid of that. They gave me full creative control. I do want to give them a shout out for that. They basically said, do whatever you want. They did not limit me in messaging or anything like that. And it was good. It was great. It was a great experience. I can't say that about everyone I've worked with, unfortunately. They did a great job of like,
always gotta throw salt at somebody.
That's who I am. And I come with a little bit of salt, because it's true, because I'm so salty about how artists are getting treated out here in these streets, that when we do get treated well, I do want to give space for that, because it's not the norm at all. So my mug was really centered around kinship. It has text on it that says, queer kinship is a love spell. It has two portraits of two queer friends. Like, you could read them as much as you want. I think queer friendship has lover in it. Some queer friends make out, some don't. Like, being physically intimate is part of queer friendship sometimes, and I want to leave it open. But I wanted to draw people that are happy to be in each other's faces, you know, and, I was trying to depict in the mug that I designed the joy that I get when I see my friends, and just, it feels cute and it feels pink. You know, I put a lot of pink in the mug because that's kind of the color that comes through when I'm around y'all. So, I'm not a very like emotive person. Like, you know, but I definitely feel very fortunate to have a group of friends like this that inspired me to make a mug around the theme of that. And that's the mug. It's available at fellowproducts.com. If you want to buy it, $2 out of every mug will go to the Trevor Project, which all artists agreed on. I think the Trevor Project is an amazing organization, and knowing that money goes to them at the end of the day makes me feel better about the collaboration. And it's just fun. It's just fun to get to make something like this. And it was a great process. So
I'm trying to find it.
Yeah.
How do I find it?
So you would go on Fellow's website, okay, and you could just search for artist series or Pride artist series. And that's where it would be.
Oh, got it. Got it.
Yeah.
Here it is. Well,
we can put it in the episode description if folks
want to support. Oh, here we go. It's right on their first page. Sip with Pride.
Celebrate Pride with curated coffees and custom Carters from the LGBTQIA plus community and allies. And there's Angelica's design.
I haven't looked at the front page yet. This is my first time.
Shop Pride Collection.
Great. Aww.
Here it is. I have to buy mine. I actually will do it.
Thank you, friend. You don't have to, but thank you.
I do. Mostly because, and then your face is here. And it says, "I'm the artist," and then your little face is there with you holding the mug.
My little face. Oh my gosh.
It's very cute.
So just to give you another insider, I did that photo shoot on campus after I finished grading.
Se ve, amiga, se ve.
You could tell I'm happy to be done with that shit. It was just a hard day. It was just a hard day. But I love that portrait of me because I'm wearing my favorite REI fleece. And that picture feels like a culmination of my year in the Pacific Northwest, but with a little bit of LA flavor that I always bring, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
I love that picture. I love this mug. It was a really fun process. I
think you also need to discuss the kind of queer kinship you experienced in the process of developing this design.
Yes. So let's get a couple things out right from this conversation. We're going to talk about how, in my opinion, queer friendship and queer kinship is superior to regular schmegular friendship between either hetero folks or folks who are not showing up for each other in a transactional way. I fucking did this design and I was really excited for my first draft. I got feedback from Jack, particularly because Jack is always very opinionated. Just present. I feel like you're very nitpicky and I love that for us. It's great. Everybody in our close circle had an input and an opinion and they went into the design, right? So like the color choices, I made a couple mock-ups. Everybody told me which color they liked. They told me the positioning. You were more open about like, you know, different things. Everybody just really generously told me what they thought, you know, and it's for us. Like, if I'm making something like this, like I want people like us to like it. Mm-hmm. So it was very intentional of me to ask. And also I ask y'all about everything I draw.
I'm just going to say like the first iteration, I didn't know if I was going to buy it at all. But yeah. Then by the end of it, I was like, okay, I buy this.
That's okay. I can take it now. Maybe at the time it was a little tender, but I could take that. You're right.
No, but that's the good thing is that like, well, when you take feedback well and you made it better, and that's what feedback is, right? I mean, and it's coming from like, again, in terms of this conversation, from this like really loving place in that, like, I know your potential and what you're capable of, and to encourage you and support you in that. And you know, sure, I'm giving you feedback, but you're the one obviously, you know, making the magic.
yeah it's something else, you know. Like if I was asked to describe what queer kinship feels like, it feels so warm and so loving. It feels like, I think for a lot of us it goes without saying that I was very lucky to have a supportive parent of the decisions I make. Not just about who I love, but also what I do. And I know that's not the case for a lot of people. I know family can be really complicated, especially biological family. And queer kinship, I think for me, is something that's like really precious because a lot of us don't come from places where we can trust and feel support. And so like, this is where we act out family, you know, this is where we get to develop that intimacy, that closeness with people. And that's really special, you know, and I think that's what makes it a little bit different than people who whose sexuality is approved by society as a whole, you know. Right. Right. Like when hetero people choose to get married, we celebrate them, we throw them a party. When they choose to, you know, enact their body autonomy, that's fine. Like, we don't have a problem, right? Plastic surgery is very well accepted for people who have normative bodies. And there's a lot of things that I think they take for granted. And so just thinking about being queer, it's really about having the group chat that supports everything and anything you do. It's about having people that are ride or die for you, in a sense of like, they're down for you. They will always have your back. Like, I always think about this too, is like, whenever I get anything, we get something, mm-hmm. you know, it's not about just me. Like, it's about the 6 or 7 of us that are constantly fucking down for each other.
Yeah.
We all share the accomplishments. We all share, like, you got a postdoc. This is my postdoc too, you know?
Yeah. Like, that's so real.
So it's almost like mutual aid in a really spiritual way, right? Like, it's,
yeah,
anything we get is ours. It's collective. And it feels, yeah, like, if that makes,
exactly,
sense.
Exactly. And this is also like, it is tied to this kind of historical legacy of like this, these queer kinship networks, right? And it's like the way that queer people have not only existed, but have like supported one another and thriving, right? I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, like more presently, even thinking about the work that a lot of these like queer trans organizations do, like, you know, Trans Latina Coalition, and how it's like, yes, it's this not like nonprofit organization, but it's like a space where there's this room, or there's this like care, right, that goes beyond providing these direct services, but these like actual love and care of community and wanting people to like have their basic needs met, right? And even
then some. About,
right, and then some. And not just that, but to thrive. And I mean, again, you know, as we always kind of remind people, like, Pride started as a riot, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Pride started as this fight to for liberation, right? To be able to be and to, mm-hmm. exist and to not, and not in isolation and not, you know, but to exist like and exist together.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I think about the friendship between like Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera, right? And like, mm-hmm. that right there is like that queer kinship of like ride or die. Like, we're literally, we're gonna run these streets together. We're gonna, mm-hmm. help the young people hustle too. Yeah. And in this other economy that, you know, because we're not included in normative society, and but we're gonna do it, and we're gonna do it in a way that honors who we are and, yeah. honors other people, right? Without trying to impose these normative standards, right? Like some of the other LGBTQ movement, yes. has done in terms of trying to, especially like historically, you know,
yeah.
like, oh, you have to dress a certain way so we can be respected. You have to still fit within these like gender norms so we can be respected, mm-hmm. which was happening in the 50s and the 60s, all of that. And then queer liberation was like, fuck no. We don't have to like subscribe to none of this heteronormative bullshit. Like, you know.
This is a shortened version of your lectures, isn't it? Because it sounds really cool. Like,
yeah. Yeah, this is what I teach.
I fucking love this. Yeah.
I'm like, if you want to watch some, learn some history.
Yeah. Tell the folks what they can supplement that with.
Before Stonewall. I know it's on Canopy. I show it in all my classes. If you have access to Canopy, I think you might be able to rent it elsewhere, like stream it online.
Before Stonewall?
Yeah. So Before Stonewall basically looks at the LGBT movement in the US
pre-1979, so pre-Stonewall.
Yeah.
Essentially, and looks at how one big thing that created these queer communities across the U.S. was actually the military,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it's the first time you have people being taken, kind of plucked, right, from their homes, mm-hmm. and you're in these same-sex spaces. Mm. But then not only are you in these same-sex spaces, but then you're stationed, right, in these places far away from home, so you can actually act on this queer desire.
That's right.
So that's why we have a lot of queer places in these like port cities, right? Like San Francisco. Mm. Because there was military there, and then people ended up being stationed there and then not wanting to even go back once their time was done, right? So then that's where you get the creation of like these first, like in New York, mm-hmm. in Newport, Rhode Island, in San Francisco, these first like gay bars. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that's how it started after World War One.
Take that, Tom Cruise.
World
Take
War
it.
Two. Uh huh.
Take that, Tom Cruise.
So that's the mini lecture on it. But
no, thank you for grounding it in that and for providing us with some resources. I also want to just say, like, you know, I got asked this by my mom a couple years ago, and I think it's such a good question. And she was like, well, what makes it different? Like, what makes your friends different than, like, you know, straight people having yeah. friends? And because she was really interested, earnestly. And
yeah, yeah.
I, you know, when I was talking to the folks at Fellow about my theme, because I had to explain my design right. at one point, and I said, you know, as a society as a whole, we place a lot of value on romantic relationships, probably too much, you know.
Yeah.
We tell each other that you have to find one person, which is something that queer community also resists. You have to
not
find
everybody, one. But
not everybody, but historically we have.
Well, yeah, well, actually, yeah. And I'm sorry, I would just like, there is also a difference between queer community and like LGBT.
Yes. Oh gosh, so. Yes.
So go on.
Whew. Okay, that's another podcast episode. but I think the messaging that we get as a society is that we have to find that one person that completes us, right? I'm just regurgitating.
Disney messaging. Movies.
Yes, like you have to find your Prince Charming. Preferably, they have to also be straight, if you're straight. and they also have to look conventionally attractive. And this person, you're going to deposit all of your love and care into, right? And your friends
make
kind of
little straight babies.
Yeah. Right. And so I was going to say something stupid.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. And so this is the messaging we get. We are told, right, through media, through family reinforcement, pressure, whatever you want to call it, that our friends take a secondary position to our romantic partner, and that our friends are supposed to just be sort of like on the sidelines or bench warmers for when we need them. And that those relationships are transactional and that they're not very fleshed out, you know? To me, in my experience, because this, I'm just talking about what I've experienced, queer friendship, queer kinship is about the opposite. You know, we treat our friends like lovers. We treat our friends with the same care than we would our romantic partners, right? If we choose to have them. We are down for our friends in the way that I think most people are not even down for their spouse. Let's be real. And I think that's something that I wish more people did, regardless of their sexual orientation. I wish that we were more careful with each other. I wish that we didn't treat our friends as coldly, you know? That we supported our friends the same way that we support romantic pursuits, because oftentimes our friendships last much longer than our romantic pursuits.
Yeah.
You know, that's the person that's going to stand by you. Yeah. And so.
Yeah. And I think too, right. Like I think about also how within within heteronormativity, right? And heteronormative, like, socializing, excuse me, not only do you put, like, your new immediate family on a pedestal, or like that becomes central, right? But then I do also see this connection always to your bio family, right? Like there's always this direct connection that your closest, the closest people to you should be your biological family, your parents, your siblings, your, you know, whatever. And I'm, and I have a really close relationship with my brothers, right? And even my mom, like, and we're all, we, I mean, we have our issues, but we're for the most part, like, very much in each other's lives, and we like each other. And so, but I do see even the difference between, like, you know, the way I engage with my queer friends who I very much see as part of my family, and how I see, like, my siblings engage with their friends, right? That it is, can be very distant, and not always, right? But, like, yeah. I think more generally, right, I think there is this kind of, like, within heteronormativity, like, there's my heteronormative family, and then the closest people to us are family, and friends aren't even important, really. You know, that kind of thing. Whereas, like, I think for me too, like, beyond, and I think that care and that showing up for each other comes from this place of, like, what you were saying, right? Like, comes from this place of, like, nobody really understands you, because to be queer is to be different, right? Sexually, and in terms of gender, possibly, right? And so, like, when you experience that kind of difference, right, it brings you closer to people who also understand that. It may not be in an identical way, but to have people who really understands what it means to navigate on a daily basis as somebody who doesn't fit within these norms.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Because my family has been, like, nothing but supportive, but they're also straight, so there's just some things I can't share with them, you know? Yeah.
Like, or that they wouldn't have any particular experience with, and it might be hard for them to get why it's difficult, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think for me, like, one of the things that I do want to address, and it's tied to this, is, like, coming out, you know, coming out for me has been a really interesting concept. I've had really different relationships to it, depending on where I was as a person. At first I felt like, oh, like, we have to do this. Like, it's not optional. We have to come out. Right. And there's a lot of pressure, at least for me in my life, to do it. And then I was really lucky to be around people who were saying, no, like, you don't have to, you're valid wherever you are in that process. If you want to tell other people that you feel safe with, great. But if you never say anything, that's also fine. And that doesn't take away from who you are and what you feel you are. I wish I would have heard that younger. And I just want to say it for anyone who's listening that is anxious about this concept of coming out, there's no such thing, you know? Because I remember someone in my family who I'm not close to telling my mom, like, well, she never came out to us. Like, we didn't know. And for me, it's like, I didn't feel safe with that person anyway, you know? And two, I found it at some point in my life to be unnecessary to come out. You know, like, the people who know and need to know, know. The people who care are aware. And yeah, that's it. You know, it's really nobody else's business unless I make it their business. And that was a really big deal for me that I could have only come around to with queer kinship and having friends that were very accepting of, like, things being unspoken for a long time.
Yeah.
So
I think the big part about being in this kind of like queer kinship love triangle or love circle is like at least in my experience is like these folks are often your biggest cheerleaders, you know. And I think it also takes time to find that, like if you don't have that, you know. I remember like being younger and feeling very judged by other gay LGBTQ people, right? Because I wasn't feminine enough, or I wasn't this enough, or feeling like I had to fit within this, I don't know, again, binary of sorts, or this kind of like, I have to choose. I have to be a butch or I have to be a fit.
Yeah.
And like, and I also kind of, you know, reproduce some of that as well. I take
sometimes survival is the name of the game,
you know, and but I've also grown and also have been like, okay, you know, what I've learned more than anything is like gender is fluid, sexuality is fluid, and ultimately, like, what matters is that we find people who, even if we place ourselves in boxes, that the people we surround ourselves with don't place us in boxes, or at least allow us to be our full selves and explore who we are, right? Absolutely. If we don't allow ourselves to at least have people who will, like, I mean, and I'm saying this from experience of, like, I remember when I was really struggling with my transition and I hadn't really talked to anybody about it. And I talked to actually to you and to our friend Sylvia. And I told both of them, like, this is kind of what I'm thinking. But I was so, like, not okay. And, like, very much scared and struggling and depressed and all of these things. And you and Sylvia were just like, what? Like, it's fine. Like, you know, like, I don't remember what y'all said, but I just
remember
y'all being, we were, like, in Sylvia's house on her couch, and like, I think
you said that's fine.
I think you all were just like, that makes sense, like, you know, because I just shared like my trajectory to how I got to where I was, I think, and I just was validated, I think, more than anything, regardless of what was said, I was validated. And I was essentially, this process was that I was given permission to be and to explore, you know,
even if that wasn't fully defined or if it was messy. And that's
happened many times for me, even when I first came out in middle school, even though my friend in middle school doesn't identify as queer, but she was one of the first people I came out to. She also had a similar reaction, like, oh, that's all you were gonna tell me, like, that's fine. You know, like, it's nothing, this doesn't change anything. Yeah. You know. Aww. And so, yeah, I think it's a lot of this queer kinship is like this space where people give you the permission that sometimes you don't even give yourself to be your full self.
Yeah. Oh, that's so powerful and so cute and true. Not just about, you know, these really important things, like you were sharing, like your transition and that really difficult process that followed, but even when we're messy with our communication, or when we're figuring out our love languages or figuring out, you know, our relationships outside of the group, like, you know, I was sharing with Jack this morning about how I see myself reflected in some messy relationships habits, and it's funny to me now because I'm like, oh wow, like, I did this to my friends. And that's okay. I was learning, you know, and they had the grace to live through that with me, you know, and they're still my friends.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Not that I did something crazy like that, but I was being really different and trying to navigate something that was important to me. And I think at the end of the day, like, that's really the standard. It's not above average, or like, I think a lot of us are unfortunately settling for a lot less in our relationships. And so I hope that queer kinship in this conversation has served as a model of what should be the minimum.
Yeah.
You know, what you deserve. Like, you deserve people to root for you in everything you do. There's no competition. Like, I really wanted to stress that.
Let's be honest. Also, like,
yeah, fuck yeah.
I mean, and again, like, this is a saying, like, queer kinship can be a model of something to, so you don't have to be queer to experience what we're talking about, right?
But absolutely, this is
how we've experienced it and how we understand it because of our identity as queer. But I'm like, I'm thinking about also kind of tying it back into these like current events or maybe current pop culture and thinking about like straight people are just not okay, you know, like intergenerationally. I mean, thinking about that meme or that photo of that, somebody wrote like with all of these movies like Encanto, was it Coco too?
Probably, yeah.
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oof, yeah. Right?
Like all these millennials are creating these fantasy movies where their parents or grandparents apologize for all the drama.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, that was like, I truly felt that way after I saw Encanto. I was just like,
yes,
this would never happen. This fucking matriarch would never apologize. Ever. Right? So the thing we've experienced is that as queers is we've been kicked out, maybe metaphorically or whatever, from our culture or whatever.
We're creating the change we want to see.
Right, but the straights are still not okay. Like, y'all also ain't being accepted for who you are. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. But that's intergenerational trauma and things that we have to change. But I think, again, like, this is a model in terms of, I mean, I'm thinking of multiple people who don't identify as queer, but they have horrible relationships with their parents because at the end of the day, their parents have too many, like, these expectations that are unrealistic and like tear down their child and like, you know, and not because of their sexuality, but because of other things. And
oh, so, yeah, that's so true. I mean, it's just one intersection, right? It could be class, it could be career, it could be anything that. Yeah, I think a lot about, obviously, Everything Everywhere All at Once, which we both saw recently and were very affected by, and has kind of that queer daughter.
Oh, right. She is queer, huh?
Yeah, yeah. It has that mother-daughter relationship that's super complicated.
But also the daughter-father relationship between Michelle Yao and her father, right?
Yes, exactly. And I think that's like,
but Michelle Yeoh's character is also queer in another life.
Yes, and this is what I'm thinking about. Okay, this is my ending thought. I don't know if you're going to follow, but I'm going to just go for it. The idea of the multiverse is super attractive to me recently, not just because of all these films coming out about it, not just because we as a culture are thinking about multiple versions of ourselves and what could have been, but because that opens the realm of possibility for what could be. You know, like I was talking to this with my younger sister yesterday, so that's why it's really present for me. But like, think of all the versions of you that could have been if you had been loved in a way that honored who you are. Yeah. What would that you look like if you had not struggled with, you know, trauma from a particular situation? What would that you have looked like? Like, I think what the multiverse gives us is the gift of thinking of possibility, you know, like mm-hmm. not to be stuck in this current version of ourselves as the only version that can exist of who we are, but to see ourselves in all these multiple possibilities and to be like, okay, that's who I want to be. The person that didn't have to go through all this shit, or the person that has healed from this really horrible obstacle or situation. How do I get there? You know, how do I access that multiverse version of myself? How do I hop onto that? You know?
Yeah.
To me, I feel like the multiplicity and the multiverse has already been enacted in my queer friendships. Like, y'all have seen me through so many versions of myself already. And you have loved every single one, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So what does it mean to be fully loved?
Yeah, and I would add to that it's very much about the here and the now, right? Like the present and the future. And it's like, okay, mm-hmm. maybe I can go back and change the things.
Right.
I can't change the decisions I made in the past, but it gives you so much more power in this mm-hmm. current moment of like, so how do I choose to love myself
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
despite experiencing that, this, that, and the other? Or how, and love can look, loving myself can mean creating boundaries, can yeah. mean caring for myself in this particular way,
maybe finding new friends,
and yeah, surrounding myself with not the current people that I'm around, or whatever it is, right? But I think it does, like, thinking about it in that way is like, well, because obviously I watched that and I'm thinking about this from a very like Buddhist perspective of like mm-hmm. well, yeah, there's, I mean, we talk about cause and effect. Every cause has a simultaneous effect. So right. we may not be able to go back and change the decisions or the causes essentially that we made, but we do have the power to, you know, make mm-hmm. these causes or think about more intentionally the decisions we make in every moment. And then over time, that creates what our life is going to look like, not just yeah. next week, but in 5, 10, 15, 20 years, right?
Yeah.
So how do you continue to choose hope and to choose love and to choose to like pour love into yourself and those around you, and then create a whole different reality than the one that you grew up with?
Yeah, exactly. And that it's not linear, you know, like as that movie teaches us,
no.
is that who we are is not linear, it's not set in stone, it's constantly changing, it's fluid. And that openness to fluidity is what I think queerness has given me, you know, like openness to things changing, things transforming, the power of love to give you the power to fight, you know, as in that film, like, seeing how kindness transforms others and how love transforms somebody completely, you know, like fighting can look very different, you know?
Yeah.
But honestly, like it sounds cheesy as fuck. And I know.
Sometimes fighting with kindness is like the most radical
thing the spot.
You can do and the most impactful thing you can do.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes like loving is the biggest fight you can do. You know, like some of us are fighting for our lives, trying to love ourselves and other people, you know?
Yeah.
And that is the biggest war we'll ever fight, is trying to love, you know, fiercely. I do want to like characterize love not as something, you know, cheesy or weak. Like love is strong, love is fierce. And love, as Bell Hooks has told us, has the power to transform us. So
mm-hmm.
it's powerful. And I think it's a tool for liberation. So queer kinship really is just an extension of love and what radical love can do, you know, like that's what it looks like. day to day.
Yeah, that's all. Nothing to add to that.
Well, it's been great to be here for June. I hope everybody has a beautiful Pride month, whatever that means, you know, Pride year, Pride life. We live a Pride life.
Yeah.
So for us, it's just another month in a parade of who we are. But yeah, just sending lots of love and gentle, kind, sweet hugs. I don't give hugs like that, but I'll send y'all a virtual one. Hugging is something I'm always looking up to. Let's be real. Any closing thoughts, Fred?
No, I think you said it all. Just, yeah, sending y'all some really queer love vibes and care of yourselves and, you know, just
wear sunscreen, you know, all the things.
Yeah, wear sunscreen, stay hydrated. Feed yourself, get some good sleep, and yeah.
And give your money to Black, Indigenous, and people of color, queer people this month at least.
Yeah. And if not, just be nice. Pero no pendejo.
Yes, no.
Okay, I'm done. Please stop. Bye, everybody.
Bye.